All right. Good morning again. Today we'll look at the book of Esther. last time we've been doing Daniel, and I told you it was kind of a happy accident that we were meant to cover Daniel before our schedule changed. We were also supposed to cover Esther. This one was not an accident. I just kind of looked, and I'm like, well, I guess I need to kind of continue in that and do the other book we were meant to do, or one of them. I'm sorry, I'm not as versed in the minor prophets, so the ones we were supposed to cover, I wasn't going to do just yet. Need a little time with that, but anyway. So this doesn't follow the exact plan I've been doing lately. Esther is a book, and it is one story. So I'm not splitting this into two different mini lessons. I'm just kind of making this one normal lesson about the book of Esther. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And let me get there in my notes also. So before we kind of dive in, just to put it in the timeline, Esther is, I would say, after what we consider the exile to Babylon. It doesn't take place in Israel, so there's a degree to which this is about being away from Israel, or in exile, if you will. But it's I'll get there later, but it takes place kind of in the time of the book of Ezra, actually, so which is after the people return. But obviously not everybody came back. Some people still stayed abroad. So it's roughly around there. Anyway. Okay, so our overview. Esther, meaning the person who's the main character of the story. She is a Jew who winds up as queen of the Persian Empire. And so that big yellow blob there, I think you can see the colors okay, is a map I pulled from the internet of the Persian Empire. So she ends up as queen of the Persian Empire, which is handy because it helped her to foil a genocide attempt on all of the Jews throughout the Persian Empire because of a bitter man named Haman. There's, we'll get to this much later, but the memory of this comes through the Feast of Purim. If you have one of those calendars that has every possible holiday on it and you're like, what is that one? That's what this is. It's a memory of the book of Esther. And, I've heard when people tell the story today, when you get to Haman's name, you're supposed to hiss. It's kind of fun. So she thwarted an attempt, to kill everyone by Haman. You know, and you're supposed to hiss. They're good job, guys. So anyway, I always thought that was kind of cute. I don't know. It's kind of a neat little, tradition there. But anyway, you don't have to do that through the whole thing. Okay. I just thought it was funny. So again, when we talk about Daniel, they were in Babylon, which is far from Jerusalem. Well, now they're in a place called Susa or Shushan, I think, King James will probably say. And that's even farther away, from Israel and from Jerusalem. So we're way out there. Just if you kind of want to place this on a map. Okay. So why is this important? Why is this, memorable? well, for the obvious reason, right? If it weren't for Esther, in a sense, the Jews would cease to exist. Now I say that, and I mean, I think God would have found a way, you know, to preserve a remnant and keep things going. But I mean, it is part of the story that she saves her people. So, that's pretty monumental. the key verse though, and we read this in the, scripture reading, If you will memorize anything out of the book of Esther, this is the one to remember. This is the famous verse, and even the last few words of it out of the book of Esther, where he says, you know, and who knows whether you have come into the kingdom for such a time as this. And so there is a song in our supplement books, I think called Such a Time as This. It's supposed to be about Esther. I don't really know it that well. I don't know. It's an okay song as far as songs go, but that's the famous statement is that, you know, maybe this was destiny is kind of how we would put it in modern terms. Maybe you came to become queen just for this reason, to save your people. And that's Mordecai's kind of encouragement to her. So our main characters, usually he's just called the king. King Ahasuerus, I guess we'll say, the king of Persia. We'll get there later, but history seems to think that this is the same as someone named Xerxes. But point is, he's the king. He's the king. You're really not going to hear much of his name throughout the story, but it's the king. All right, and then Esther, of course, she's the hero, a Jew who becomes queen. And Mordecai is her cousin. I think it's described as her, she's his uncle's daughter or something like that. So cousin, right? If I have that right. And then Haman, bad guy, hiss, right? Okay. Anyway. okay. So we'll go through, the story, just kind of skimming through. It's 10 chapters. I'm not going to read it all, of course, but, I'll try to kind of skim some of the bigger moments, and go through. So the beginning of the story, you've got King Ahasuerus and a woman named Vashti, if that's how you say it, who was queen already. And and so I'll go to verse 10. Even though it's a lot of names, it's just kind of the beginning of the sentence. So Esther chapter 1 and verse 10, there's some sort of feast going on the seventh day when the heart of the king was merry with wine. He commanded, and I'm sorry in advance of these names, Mechuman, Biztha, Harbana, Bigtha, and Abagtha, Zathar, and Karkas, the seven chamberlains that served in the presence of Ahasuerus the king, to bring Vashti the queen before the king, with the crown royal, to show the people and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look on. But the queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment by his chamberlains. Therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned in him. So, sorry, I made notes and I can barely see them now. I should have done that a little darker. Anyway, so she's asked to come out and refuses. You don't know for sure, but you get the impression that she's asked to do something very inappropriate, it seems, is why she refuses. It's not like, just come and say hello, and she's just stubborn about it. I don't think it's that. It does seem that there's something, you know, this is a banquet, there's been lots of drinking. It seems like he's trying to ask her to do something very wrong. But whatever the reason, it's irrelevant a little bit to the story. For some reason, she refuses, and so she's deposed, is the word we would call. She's made not queen anymore. So if you so it kind of goes into that in the end of the chapter. I'll just go ahead and skip ahead to chapter 2 because it kind of catches us up on that anyway. So chapter 2, and starting in verse 2, is where they'll look for a new queen. So it says, Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan, the palace of the house, to the house of the women, to the custody of Hege, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them, And let the maiden, it's kind of the key verse, verse 4, right as the train is coming. let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti, and the thing pleased the king, and he did so. So there's kind of the setup. It's almost like, you know, Cinderella, right? The ball, and they all want to be, you know, married to the prince who's single, right? You know, so it's almost kind of that same situation, right? So she's, you know, everyone's hoping to be the one. And, you can probably guess who it's going to be. So anyway, and so verses 5-7, we get a little background about Esther. I'll go ahead and read that. Now in Shushan, the palace, or Susa, the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, the king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, and that is Esther. So here's another one, kind of like Daniel and his friends, who has a Jewish name and then a different name. This case is not Babylonian. It's Persian, because she's in Persia. So Esther is her Persian name, it seems, according to my footnotes in the study Bible here. I'm going to trust that. It says Esther is the Persian word for star. So it's kind of neat. Anyway, so Hadassah, that is Esther, verse 7, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So he kind of adopted her because her parents passed away, and she was, as it says, very beautiful. My notes are fading here. All right, so we'll skip to verse 12 and then kind of pick up the story there. Now, when every maid's turn was come to go into King Ahasuerus after that she had been 12 months, according to the manner of the women. So there's this whole elaborate procedure. It takes a year, apparently, for so were the days of their purification accomplished, to wit, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with sweet odors and other things for the purifying of the women. Then thus came every maiden unto the king. Whatsoever she desired was given her to go out, to go with her out of the house of the women unto the king's house. In the evening she went, and on the morrow she returned to the house of the women, to the custody of Shashgaz, king's chamberlain, which kept the concubines. She came in unto the king no more, except that the king delighted in her, and that she were called by name. It's kind of a preview of what we talked about before, that, you know, you had to be called to see the king. Verse 15, now when the turn of Esther, so it's you know, Esther's turn to be Cinderella or whatever. when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her in for his daughter, was come to go in unto the king, she required nothing but with Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women appointed, and Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. So everyone thinks she's pretty, okay. Verse 16, so Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus into his house royal in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And here's the key verse, verse 17. And the king loved Esther among, and I don't know, I wouldn't put a lot of stock in the word love, but you know, the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So she does get the title. All right. So all's going well, and then, chapter 3, we get good old Haman brought into the story. And so let's read verses 1 through 5, I guess, and then we'll pick up, well, 1 through 6. We'll just do 1 through 6. After these things did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. So, makes sense, right? He's a faithful Jew, and he didn't want to bow to somebody else. Though I don't know that that would have been terribly wrong to show respect to a king's servant, whatever. Verse 3, then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then Haman was full of wrath. So he's got a vendetta against Mordecai. And verse 6, and he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. So it's a little extreme. Mordecai doesn't bow to Haman, and Haman is upset, and so he says, I'm going to kill all of your people in the entire Persian Empire. Little bit of an overreaction, I think. So that's where we are. And so I don't, I meant to put a more specific verse here. Really, we'll pick up in verse 10 of chapter 4, which was the scripture reading. but so the king's decree goes out, and, you know, the king agrees to this somehow. And, you know, Esther and Mordecai, of course, find out about this decree that, that everyone is going to be killed. But for some reason, I guess they have to kind of coordinate the logistics of this. So it, there's a good amount of time, that they have before this actually happens. And so Mordecai, says, you know, goes to Esther and, asks her to do something about it. So we'll read this again, even though we read this in the scripture reading, starting verse 10. And Esther spake unto Hatak and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. So she's relaying a message through somebody else to Mordecai, through a middleman, but message to Mordecai. Verse 11, all the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come into the king, unto the king, into the inner court, who is not called, there is but one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. And they told to Mordecai Esther's words. So we'll stop there for a second. So you have to be called to be before the king. and there's one exception to this rule, right? You can hope that if you just rush in there and he's somehow, for some reason, decides to kindly extend his scepter, you know, the stick thing, then you get mercy, but it's a risk. So verse 13, then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther. So they're kind of like, you know, pen pals, it seems, going back and forth with messengers. Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. So meaning, if it's a selfish reason that you think it's not going to affect you, you're going to die too. So, you know, I don't know what you're concerned about. It's all or nothing at this point anyway, right? Verse 14, for if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, it's a question. So if you hold your peace, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place? Now, again, maybe, you know, maybe God would somehow find another way to save his people, or allow for a remnant. But Mordecai is kind of saying this, you know, in a logical way, you know, if you don't do it, who will? Right? You are the queen. Like, who do you think the deliverer is going to be in this situation if it's not you? And he says, middle of verse 14, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And here's our key verse or section of it. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? So maybe this was God's purpose all along, to have you be part of the kingdom, even as a Jew, to be in a Persian kingdom, just so that you could save your people. So verse 15, then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did all that Esther had commanded him. So she agrees to do it. All right, so like we said, she's risking her life here. But she goes in anyway. So chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house. And the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house, over against the gate of the house. And it was so, when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. So she survived. That's good. we'll go to the next verse. So she comes up with a plot. The next few verses here, chapter 5, we'll start in verse 3. Then the king said unto her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther, and what is thy request? It shall be given thee to half the kingdom. So that's mighty generous. He's like, basically, almost whatever you want. I mean it, right? Verse 4, and Esther answered, if it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him. Then the king said, cause Haman to make haste, that he may do as Esther hath said. So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And the king said unto Esther at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? Even to half of the kingdom, it shall be performed. Then answered Esther and said, my petition, my request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet, which I shall prepare for them. And I will do tomorrow as the king has said. So she prepares this banquet. I'm not sure. I saw something that said it was two different feasts. To me, it seems more like it's like a multi-day feast. Either way, there's going to be another day of eating. So however you want to interpret that. So I'm kind of skimming over chapter 6, which is fairly important, I guess, but I don't know. It's just for the sake of an outline, I'm just kind of skimming past it. But Mordecai gets praised for something good he did in the past. It's kind of a neat little mini story in here where the king had a sleepless night, and instead of scrolling his phone, he decides to read the royal archives. So I don't know. Anyway, so Mordecai gets exalted, and of course Haman really doesn't like that either. And so he builds the gallows there, in, I believe, in chapter 6. So, again, we're kind of skimming through here. Okay. So 7:6. That's right. I was looking at that thinking it says chapter 8, and I'm like, I know I meant to read chapter 7. I'm sorry. Yes, the screen is right. I'm getting dyslexic. Okay. So chapter 7, let's read 1 through 6, and then the end of the chapter. So the king and Haman came to the banquet of Esther the queen, and the king said again unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request? And it shall be performed even to half the kingdom. Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he, and where is he that durst presume in his heart to do so? So who's the bad guy? And verse 6, and Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. And so then we'll skip to verse 9. And Harbonah, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, "Behold also the gallows, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who had spoken good before the king, standeth in the house of Haman." Then the king said, "Hang him thereon," meaning hang Haman on the gallows that was made for Mordecai. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he'd prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. So, pretty ironic, turn of events. I meant to skip to there anyway. I think often, I don't know about you, this is kind of the end of where I remember the story of Esther. And there's three more chapters. So it's kind of the memorable part of the story is, you know, the bad guy is defeated, right? And the good people are elevated, but it's not the end, right? There's still this decree out there, to kill everybody. So that has to be cleaned up. So that's, chapter 8, and, we can read that. We're doing all right on time. So, chapter 8, I'll read verses 1 through 6 to talk about that. It says, "On that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai." So that's some real turn of events there. "And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet." So she again is kind of risking her life again. Before it seems that, you know, even though she wasn't called. "And besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite and his device that he had devised against the Jews. Then the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king and said, 'If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews, which are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come to my people, or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred?'" And so he agrees and, you know, tears up the decree and or maybe issues a new one to reverse it or whatever it is. But anyway, so the people are saved, and or spared, I guess is the word I want to say. And this is really the part in chapter 9 that is where the Feast of Purim comes from. And again, this is the one we really don't focus on. So not only do the Jews escape from being destroyed, but they actually turn on their enemies and destroy their enemies. And that's really what the Feast of Purim, I think, is the memory of, not necessarily the escape, at least the way I understand it. I don't know. I could be wrong, but that's how I'm reading it. So chapter 9, verses 1 through 2. "Now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the same, when the king's commandment and his decree drew near to be put in execution, in the day that the enemies of the Jews hoped to have power over them, though it was turned to the contrary, that the Jews had rule over them that hated them, the Jews gathered themselves together in their cities throughout all the provinces of the king Ahasuerus to lay hand on such as sought their hurt, and no man could withstand them, for the fear of them fell upon all the people." And it goes on from there in detail, but the Jews, again, you know, got to turn around and and take revenge on those that were going to kill them. All right, so we'll skip to verses. 18 and 19. and we'll see the beginning of this feast. "But the Jews that were at Shushan assembled together on the 13th day thereof, and on the 14th day thereof, and on the 15th day of the same, they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. Therefore, the Jews of the villages that dwelt in the unwalled towns made the 14th day of the month Adar a day of gladness and feasting, and a good day, and of sending portions one to another. Verse 26, wherefore they called these days Purim, after the days of poor, I don't know how you pronounce that. Therefore, for all the words of this letter, and of that which they had seen concerning this matter, and which had come unto them, the Jews ordained, and took upon them, and upon their seed, and upon all such as joined themselves unto them, so as it should not fail, that they would keep these 2 days, according to their writing, and according to their appointed time every year, and that these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every family, every province, and every city, and that these days of Purim should not fail from among the Jews, nor the memorial of them perish from their seed. And again, you can still see people observing this feast today. It's kind of neat. It's one of the only, it's really like the only biblical feast that happens outside of the books of Moses. It's kind of interesting. You know, there's some, I don't know, there's some mentions of things that are remembered, but this one seems to have really, you know, lasted through all that time. So, Okay, the cursor is on my side, but not yours. That just looked distracting to me. Okay, I think I went a little too far. all right. So, just some interesting things along the way. Some little bonus material. Mentioned this, but the scholars seem to think that Ahasuerus is the same as King Xerxes. I guess there's some translation things that you can figure out with those two names and their meaning. I'm going to trust that. I don't know. But what that does is it kind of gives you a timeline of when this would have taken place. And if it is King Xerxes, then that would put it pretty much smack in the middle of the book of Ezra. So if you're familiar with the book of Ezra, and I probably wouldn't be this familiar with it had I not taught a class on the book of Ezra, because I'll admit I really did not pay a lot of attention to the book of Ezra before that. So I understand if it's not your go-to book, but Ezra has 10 chapters, and it's about in the middle. There's a split. So the first half of Ezra takes place like 60 years before the second half. And it's not really obvious, but all of it takes place after or as part of the return from exile. And so the thought is that Esther takes place somewhere in that middle 60 years of the book of Ezra. So it's a little, you know, our Bibles go, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, right? And so you might think Esther comes after, and it's kind of almost, right? It's kind of in the middle, but you can't put a book in the middle of another book. So they had to put it somewhere. All right, and the other thing, I don't know about you, this always gets me, you know, why does a queen have to be summoned to the king? Why doesn't she, you know, already have permission to go see the king? You know, it makes you think that they probably don't share a bedroom, right? So you kind of get the impression, well, maybe there's not just one queen, you know, and if, as I tried to look into this and looked at a couple sources, you know, as you would imagine, and I mean, the kings of Israel were just as guilty of having many wives, right? Persian kings also. And there's a mention in the book of Esther about the women and the concubines and things like that. And so, it seems that, you know, there was like a chief queen or something like that, you know, like kind of the most special wife of the king or whatever. But, you know, she may have been, the point is that Esther may not have been the only queen. So, but she was, you know, one of them and enough that she found favor, with the king, which was pretty important, to that. So, as we come to the end, there's something famous about the Book of Esther, which is that nowhere in the book does it say Lord or God or Heavenly Father or anything like that. It's really remarkable. I didn't go and look to see if it's the only book like that. I think it is, but I'm not certain. but it is very notable for being a book that's 10 chapters long and never mentions it. Nor does it seem to ever be quoted in the Bible. So, you know, you say, well, you know, does it belong in the Bible? And overwhelmingly, yes, is the answer through history. So for one, it definitely, you get the sense of the providence of God. And I mean, he's in the story, whether he's mentioned or not. I mean, he's clearly there. and then, one of these days I'll get into a lesson, and I think Brian's done a lesson on the idea of the canon of the Bible, what books are supposed to be in the Bible and what aren't. Even the Hebrew canon, the what we call the Old Testament, the Jews and their view of the Hebrew Bible have put Esther with it as long as you can find any official idea of a canon of the Hebrew Bible. So, there's not much that would tell you not to put it with the rest of the books. And then, you know, the idea that the Feast of Purim, you know, has lasted so long, you know, kind of gives you evidence that people generally agreed with this as scripture. So, so that is it. I'll just leave the overview, up on the screen. If you were taking notes, just as a reminder, for review, but, we'll end the lesson there. So yeah, it's a really neat, and rich book, and story of Esther. So as we wrap up, I'll just, extend the invitation, you know, to all of us, I think I see this a lot, that if we think of the church as the kingdom, you know, I was thinking earlier, I think I'll get through this entire lesson without saying, you know, we talked in class this morning about, and I somehow managed to still fit it in there. We talked in class this morning about how the church is the kingdom. You know, and that famous line in Esther of, you know, who knows if you've come into the kingdom for such a time as this. And, I think I see a lot of that in the members here, that, you know, I feel like we all have stepped up a lot and really, you know, contribute a lot, that you've come into the kingdom for such a time as this, you know, if you want to say it that way. But if there's any here that are not in the kingdom, which is to say the church, which is to say, that have not been saved, and you wish to obey the call of the gospel, then it would be a good time to come forward. Or if there's any that want to ask for prayers of the saints, then, again, we can do that as we, if you want to come forward as we stand and sing.